Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is November 6th, 2016, and this is episode 124, Goodbye to You, a GameBuoy look back on the Wii U. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to be discussing the end of life of the Wii U and talking about our favorite and least favorite moments with it. So please look forward to that. But in the meantime, buckle in because we have our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, do you want to get us started?
Yes. So the other day, Nintendo did a direct for Animal Crossing New Leaf and it announced lots of new features. This is the Welcome Amiibo update, and as you would probably guess, you'll be able to welcome Amiibo into your game.
And that's this is live already.
Yes. So once you have updated, you will have Harvey's Campground in your game, and you can invite characters to come to the RV park. There are also things like exclusive furniture and mini games that you can get with Meow coupons that you get from the RV park. This includes the Wii U Amiibo Festival game, Desert Island Escape from Animal Crossing Amiibo Festival. If you get a Wii U toy, and if you get a new Nintendo 3DS or new Nintendo 3DS XL toy in-game, you can get Animal Crossing Puzzle League. These will apparently cost coupons in the game or play coins, which is a little bit of a bummer. I would have preferred more of a functionality like the Virtual Console from original Animal Crossing, but...
That actually kind of is what it's like. And in fact, these minigames are full-featured games. I know that the Puzzle League game in this has like a story mode to it and everything. It's like a whole game experience. It actually looks sort of deep enough that if Nintendo were selling it as like a standalone on the eShop, I wouldn't have been surprised. So it is a really impressive package. I have installed this update, but I haven't touched it yet because I'm not a big Animal Crossing person.
Right.
But just unlocking Animal Crossing Puzzle League for me, like, that's enough of a carrot that I'm about to get back into it.
Yeah, and if you are just unable to bear your town and see who moved away and stuff, you can sell your town to Tom Nook and get a certain amount of bells in exchange.
In order to start over, right?
Yeah.
But as I understand it, you can only do that if your town is advanced beyond a certain point. So those of you like myself who played it and then never really picked it back up, there's not going to be a lot for us. We'll probably just have to start a new town without any of the extra bells and whistles, no pun intended.
Though...
someone like Slagkick probably could sell his town for a pretty hefty profit.
When you install the update, they will pull all the weeds for you, so that's something that's always been like a deterrent to coming back to an abandoned town, so that's nice. So, if
Excellent.
You are interested in revisiting Animal Crossing New Leaf, this is the time.
And what about you, Slaggy? How do you feel about this?
I'll probably dig it out, but there's just so much coming out in the next couple of weeks that I'm like, I'm really gonna have time to actually devote to Animal Crossing.
Alright, well, and you know, I sit here like, oh, I would love to unlock Animal Crossing Puzzle League, but I've been working since Friday on My Japanese Coach, the DS release by Ubisoft, and it's like I would probably prefer to use some of my commute time for that rather than playing Animal Crossing that I don't even like that much just for a mini game that I would like. So
yeah.
I feel that, but for people who love Animal Crossing, I'm super excited for y'all. Let's see, we also have a interesting follow-up here. You know, in the lead up to BlizzCon, there was starting to get to be sort of like speculation at a fever pitch that maybe Blizzard was finally going to announce legacy servers for World of Warcraft. Now, previously, they have indicated that, you know, they're never going to do this. The fan base thinks they want this, but they really don't. Something that's interesting is that J. Allen Brack, who is one of, you know, the big wigs over at Blizzard, basically shot down the hype that, you know, a legacy server was going to be announced, but they did indicate that, you know, they are now listening and that this is like a potential possibility in the future. So definitely for those of you out there who had your hearts set on legacy servers and were very disappointed when previously it was indicated that that would never happen, I might say never say never.
Yeah.
We also have word here that Square Enix is still committed to bringing more Dragon Quest titles to the West. You know, know, unfortunately, we did get some sales information on Dragon Quest VII on 3DS. It did not do well, but Dragon Quest Heroes has done well, Dragon Quest Builders has done well, Dragon Quest VIII for 3DS is still on its way, and Square Enix has indicated, you know, they're going to stick with it and, you know, keep trying to make this brand happen in North America, to which I can only say thank you so much.
So, Koei Tecmo Games apparently had a historic simulation game day stream on Nico Nico Live. And during this time, Koei Tecmo Games general producer, Ko Shibusawa-san, announced that they are bringing the Nobunaga's Ambition series to the Nintendo Switch. And
awesome.
That's all we know right now, but sounds like we'll probably have a new Nobunaga title.
Fantastic.
Maybe next year.
We also have word here that we are going to be getting a free downloadable character for World of Final Fantasy. This is going to be Sora from Kingdom Hearts. This is something I'm really excited about. He's going to be available as a free DLC this winter. And I think this is actually going to be the first time that we're going to see Kingdom Hearts content in Final Fantasy. So definitely very exciting there. World of Final Fantasy, I've actually been playing a lot in the last couple of weeks. I'm really enjoying it, and it's reminded me a lot of Kingdom Hearts, so this crossover makes a lot of sense to me. We also have word that Neo King of Fighters 95 and several other Neo Geo games are headed to the PlayStation 4 platform on the PSN shop. This is going to be Alpha Mission 2, Fatal Fury, Metal Slug, NAM 1975, Neo Turf Masters, Samurai Spirits, and World Heroes. It looks like a couple of these games have already popped up on the PSN shop, with more to come in the rest of 2016 and early 2017.
And that's Kingdom Fighters 94.
What did I say?
You said 95, which was a great year, so I don't blame you.
Okay.
Our favorite half-genie hero unfortunately may not be available in half-genie hero yet, but she has joined the cast of Runbo for Wii U. So if you download the free update, which is available now, you can have the adorable half-genie hero in Runbo.
Fantastic. We also have word here that Dissidia Final Fantasy for arcades is going to be getting a new character announcement in an upcoming live stream on November 7th. So by the time you hear this episode, this announcement will have already been made. You know more than us. You should feel special. Slaggy, who are you hoping for here?
Oh, I don't even know, because I'd have to go look at who already is in it.
Just name a character.
Let's see. How about, is Sorceress Adea already in it?
Nope.
I'd like Sorceress Adea.
All right. You can have your fingers crossed for Adea. I am going to have my own fingers crossed for, I don't know, like Edgar or Sabin. I'm basic. We also have big news here that Blue Dragon is now part of the Xbox One's backwards compatible game library. Of course, I'm very, very, very excited about this. This is the Mistwalker Artoon game that was created by Hironobu Sakaguchi-san. Characters designed by Akira Toriyama. The soundtrack was composed by Nobuo Uematsu-san. It very much plays like a Dragon Quest game, similar to the way that Lost Odyssey plays like a Final Fantasy game. So if you're more Dragon Quest than Final Fantasy, this is going to be the Xbox 360 JRPG classic for you. Now available on Xbox One.
So you might remember a while back we talked about SNK Playmore changing their name back to SNK. Well, this will be officially happening as of December 1st.
Exciting. I'm super, super excited about that. We also have word here that Pokemon Sun and Moon are now available for digital preload for pre-orders.
Oh boy.
Yeah, right? So, you know, for those of you who are interested in buying Sun and or Moon digitally and want to take full advantage of, you know, the time window of opportunity to play the game when the download unlocks, you can get started on downloading it now. The titles require 3.2 gigs of space to download, and preloading the game will give you a bonus of 12 quick balls to use in-game.
Ooh.
Like, that sounds really basic, but to me, I'm just like, if I could start with 12 quick balls, that would get my early Poke journey going a little faster.
Yeah, get you Rockruff.
Yes, Rockruff, come through. We also have word here that we're going to be getting more news on Dragon Quest XI during the series 30th anniversary program that's going to be airing in Japan on December 29th.
Excellent.
Please look forward to it.
Spike Chunsoft and Axis Games are bringing the first two titles from the Zero Escape series to PS4 and Vita in the collection called Zero Escape the Nonary Games.
Excellent. You know, I'm a big fan of these games, and I'm really excited that more people will get to play them now that they'll be on, you know, PlayStation 4. Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, and we Nine Hours, Nine Persons, Nine Doors is going to be a HD remake.
Oh, fantastic. We do also have confirmation that this release will be available for PC as well. So, you know, definitely very exciting, especially on PC. You know, everyone will have the opportunity to play these games in a format that will, you know, stand the test of time.
Hearthstone is heading to the mean streets, I guess if you call them streets, of Gadgetzan in the next expansion, which is coming out in December. We'll add 132 new cards, and apparently one of the, I don't want to say gimmicks, but one of the twists this time is that in the Hearthstone version of Gadgetzan, you will... Oh, I'm confusing Gadgetzan and Gnomeregon. I'm horrible. So yes, I guess,
yes, you are.
I guess Gadgetzan doesn't really have streets either. It's kind of just like a desert encampment. Anyway, there are going to be three factions called the Grimy Goons, the Cabal, and the Jade Lotus, and various classes will have different factions, so it'll be interesting to see how that affects the gameplay.
Awesome. You know, this was announced just this last few days at BlizzCon. We also have some other BlizzCon news. The big one, of course, was the final reveal of the new Overwatch character, Sombra. Of course, Sombra has been the focus of a ARPG that has been going on, or however, you know, augmented reality game, or whatever that acronym is, that's been going on for the last several months. So we've already known a lot about Sombra, but it's very interesting to see that she's finally coming for real. She is available for play at BlizzCon, and she will be going up on the PTR this Tuesday, as I understand it. So very exciting stuff. We also have word here that Blizzard is doing a remake of sorts of the first Diablo game within Diablo 3 as a part of the celebration of Diablo's 20th anniversary.
We heard you like Diablo, so we put Diablo in your Diablo so you can
Diablo
dungeon crawl
while
you dungeon crawl.
Oh, well done. This patch is called The Darkening of Tristram. It is going to be free to all Reaper of Souls owners on both PC and console. And what this is basically going to be is a rift, which, you know, exists in that game, that takes you to Old Tristram, and you have, you know, the 16-floor dungeon to descend down. It will have, you know, all four of the main old Diablo bosses, and, you know, supposedly a ton of, like, retro pixel shader effects that are gonna stand over the game's normal graphics to make it look more like old Diablo. Looks like a very ambitious little free bonus. I'm really excited about this. I've seen a lot of people complaining online that it's not, like, a full remake, but to me, as, like, a free bonus, I think it's really cool. What do you think, Slaggy?
I'm excited to get back into Diablo 3 on the X-Bone.
Awesome.
Where we have our characters going.
Well, and on a related note, we also got the announcement of a new downloadable character class for Diablo 3 that will be releasing in 2017. This is the Necromancer, the fan favorite class from Diablo 2. You know, I'm really excited about this. While I do think it's a little weird that we're getting a character download and not like new whole expansion or whatever, there will also be two new zones added to the game around this time, and those zones will not be a paid download, although the Necromancer himself will be. I myself would be inclined to download the Necromancer as I played Necromancer in Diablo 2.
Yeah, interesting that we're still getting this content for Diablo 3, but they're not quite ready to do any Diablo 4.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, given how troubled the launch of Diablo 3 is, or was, I'm not surprised to hear that. I feel like they're probably going to take their time with Diablo 4 again to make sure that when it does come to market, it is welcomed with open arms.
Oh, you know, this just made me realize, I guess this Diablo 1 inside of Diablo 3 must be how everyone was convinced that Diablo 1 was going to get a remaster or whatever.
Probably, yeah.
When they had, like, art jobs or whatever.
We also have word here that you will be able to unlock an awesome Genji skin in Overwatch. This is the Oni Genji. It is just really fantastic, using some of the visuals and concepts of, like, Japanese demons as a part of Genji's costume. And you will be able to unlock this if you play Heroes of the Storm between November 15th and January 4th with friends. If you play 15 games in any mode with at least one friend, you will get free access to this skin.
Interesting.
In release date news, we have word here that Cyber Dimension Neptune will be releasing on PlayStation 4 in Japan on February 9th, 2017. Trillion, God of Destruction, has been delayed on PC for Steam to November 7th. The Witch and the Hundred Knight 2 will be releasing in Japan on February 23rd. This week, the Wii U Virtual Console got Donkey Kong Jungle Beat, which is, of course, as I've said previously, one of my very favorite of all time 2D platforms. platformers, as well as the DS sports title developed by Square Enix, Mario Hoops 3-on-3. That is a kind of a wild game, as it has Mario and Final Fantasy characters crossing over. Definitely worth a look if you're into those franchises. We also have word here that Dragon Quest VIII will be releasing on the 3DS in the West on January 20th.
Hoping for better sales.
Miitopia will be releasing in Japan on December 8th. This is the upcoming new smaller game that appears to be based on the Street Pass Plaza game, Find Me. So definitely very interesting. I know a lot of people who really loved Find Me. And last but certainly not least, we have word that Chaos Code New Sign of Catastrophe will be releasing on November 9th in Japan for PS4.
Yeah, did you see that the Miitopia classes include a tank that is like literally a tank?
I didn't, but that is adorable. I know there was a bunch of Miitopia news this morning. I haven't seen it yet, but maybe that's where that was from.
Probably.
Well, with all that having been said, let's move on to some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god. News.
So the first big piece of news here, and this is all everyone could talk about for a good week there, is that Nintendo has decided to let us all down easily and has told us when the next big release of Nintendo Switch news is going to be. And this is going to be January 12th, 2017. During this presentation, we will be learning about the Nintendo Switch's final release date, its release pricing, as well as a look at the lineup of games currently in development. It's like, what do you think about this?
I mean, as much as I want news now, it's only 2 months away, and at that point it'll be only be about 2 more months away, assuming they're still keeping that March release window.
Well, considering that they called out March again in the announcement trailer, I don't think there's any chance that it won't hit March at this point. So I'm definitely super excited about this. I think it's interesting that they released the date for this announcement so early, but I also think it's really a very positive thing. You know, I think a lot of the discussion around Nintendo Switch was sort of focused on when are we going to hear more? What are we going to hear? Now we know that, and we can all just get back to talking about, you know, what we think of the concept, what games we're hoping to see. Definitely think that announcing this date this far in advance was a very good call out of Nintendo. We also have word here that Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 plus 2.5 Remix has been announced for PlayStation 4. This is going to include both of the HD Remix releases from PlayStation 3. Playable on the PlayStation 4. It's going to be releasing in North America on March 28th, Japan on March 9th, and Europe on March 31st, all 2017. We also got a gigantic announcement this weekend, well, gigantic to a certain kind of gamer, I suppose, that IntiCreates has worked with Sunsoft in order to acquire the license to Blaster Master.
What?
And are now making a new Blaster Master game in an 18/16-bit style. For 3DS, it will be available on the eShop titled Blaster Master Zero. It's expected to release in spring of 2017. What did you think of this one, Saigi?
It came out of nowhere. I didn't know that Sunsoft was still a thing.
Yeah, I have my fingers crossed. I love Blaster Master. Huge, huge, huge fan. And this just looks great. This really, all of the art that they've shared looks like really like thematically appropriate and appropriate to the game while still also looking new and fresh.
IntiCreates usually is pretty reliable.
Yeah.
Would you say you have your fingers crossed for these?
I see what you did. Yeah. So Monster Hunter Double Cross has been announced for Nintendo 3DS. This is a G version style release of Monster Hunter Cross, which is itself known in North America as Monster Hunter Generations. It adds the much missed G rank back to the game. It's going to include two new styles as well as additional features that haven't yet been discussed. This is releasing in Japan on March 18th, 2017 for Nintendo 3DS. And something very interesting about that date is that that has been heavily rumored in the gossip mill as the release date of the Nintendo Switch. A lot of people are speculating.
Final Fantasy Dimensions 2 has been announced for smartphones in Japan. This is known as Final Fantasy Legends 2 in Japan, and it is currently in development. It apparently will be a brand new adventure rather than the a continuation from the previous game.
Yeah, so typical historical in the style of Final Fantasy. I thought Final Fantasy Dimensions was fun. You know, it was basically just like a new original Final Fantasy 16-bit title for mobile phones. So I'm definitely interested in what a Final Fantasy Dimensions 2 might be like. We also have word of a new Poplocroy game. This is going to be coming to smartphone and will be properly announced in January.
Poplocroy brings you joy.
We also have word here of a new Nintendo 2DS. Now, it should be noted, this is not a new 3DS hardware level 2DS. It's just a new
lowercase new.
Yeah, right? It is going to come with new Super Mario Bros. 2. This is the new Super Mario Bros. 2 Edition 2DS. It'll be releasing in Japan on December 15th, and it will be available for purchase for about $130.
All right. Keita Takahashi-san has announced a fanciful new AR game called World. It is basically a game where you will have, using AR, cartoonish items pop up around your house or room, and you can interact with it. But the goals are, of course, unclear because it's a Takahashi-san game. It is being developed by Phenomena Studio, who you might have remembered was working on Watam, the game about explosions and poop. So we don't know anything about Watam's development right now, but World is actually available for the Lenovo Fab to Pro phone on the Google Play Store. Only that phone can run that right now. Apparently it has something to do with some functionality that this phone has about like the depth of 3D mapping. It's called Tango. I'm not super knowledgeable about that despite owning an Android phone, so hopefully we'll see a little more possibility for this game, because it would suck if it was limited to such a small audience.
Indeed. We also have word here that THQ Nordic now owns the rights to all titles and projects from the classic games developer Nova Logic. That includes the Delta Force series, the Comanche series, the Joint Operations series, and the F-22 series.
Oh, right, bro.
We also have word here that Steam has banned misleading store page screenshots. So moving forward, all games on Steam will have to have the screenshots section full of actual screenshots, not like character art and box art
no
and
more
pre-rendered
bullshots.
Images and bullshots. It'll just, moving forward, have to be screenshots. And to this, I say, praise Jesus, hallelujah. I think this is a huge, huge, huge positive. This is something that for me is a huge, 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 huge disappointment when I am interested in a game and I want to see what its like user interface looks like or whatever, and I can't. That actually puts me off buying games on Steam sometimes, because that sort of thing is like really important to me. So I'm really, really excited that this change is being made.
Indeed.
Well, with all that having been said, we do have a little bit of news for the Culture Club. This is, of course, where we talk about news stories that are important to today's games world and the people that play them. So this first one is one that I want to talk about. This is, of course, over at Kotaku. It is an introduction piece to their new staff writer, Gita Jackson. We here at Gamebuie.org are huge fans of Gita's. I think that the work that she does is fantastic. I have seen her speak at conventions, on panels. I think that she is just an absolute angel. I think she has a lot of super intelligent things to say, and I am super stoked to see her contributing over at Kotaku.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, you know, I've always thought she had been over at the MTV game. Did they have a special name over there? I think it was just MTV Games. You know, she's done work with Giant Bomb and Paste, and, you know, everywhere that she's contributed, you know, she's offered a really valuable perspective. And, you know, we lost a couple of great Kotaku voices to Waypoint, which is
the name of Vice Gaming.
Vice Gaming. And, I mean, yeah. I guess Giant Bomb, and, you know, a lot of the sites have kind of lost a couple of their great writers. So to have someone like Gita Jackson step in and, you know, offer her perspective to, you know, Kotaku, who's already, you know, really come so far over the years, I think we're just going to continue to see great content.
Yeah, absolutely. And this other piece was one you wanted to talk about, right?
Yeah, this is a cute little bit of gaming history revived. In honor of the NES Classic Edition, the Nintendo Powerline is making a return from November 11th through 13th.
And what does that mean, the Nintendo Powerline?
So if you call 1-425-885-7529, which I've got to be honest, I can't remember if that was the original member or not. You'll be able to hear pre-recorded hints, tips, and tricks for the NES Classic Edition's 30 games, and hear stories from the Nintendo Gameplay Counselor. So it'll be a little bit different than the original Nintendo Power Line, where you would actually talk to a live representative, but I still think it's a really cute touch, a really fun way to honor the history of that. I remember maybe about a year ago, we had a great smash hit article about the history, kind of a little look back at the Nintendo Power Line and kind of the culture behind that and what it was like to work as a Nintendo Power Line member. So if you are planning on getting the NES Classic, I mean, I guess even if you don't, you can still call in and check out the Nintendo Power Line.
Ah, yeah, right. And I looked it up, and that actually is the number that it used to be as well.
Oh, wow.
Right? So very, very exciting stuff, I think. Good call. Anything else to say about that?
Nope.
All right, well, then it's time to talk about some stuff that is...
controversial.
Oh my god.
That was controversial, in case you didn't get it. So the first piece of news here that I have is one that, you know, basically Overwatch did this really cool Halloween event. I talked a little bit last week about how much I was enjoying playing it. Basically, there was a stated end time for this event of this past Monday or Tuesday at 4 p.m. You know, obviously people were like, okay, well, I'm going to keep trying to grind out the skins I want, and if I can't get them, then, you know, at 3:45, I will just go buy them with in-game currency. But, you know, people wanted to give themselves every opportunity to win it first, before just spending the money. That's well and good, except unfortunately, due to the way that the time zones work and where the servers are located for Blizzard games, it ended up rolling over about an hour earlier than most people expected, and the event came to an end for them without them getting to buy their skins. On the scale of things, this is a very minor controversy, of course, but it has been interesting to see how such a minor thing as, you know, lack of coordination with the server time zones really led to this whole kerfuffle. What's your take, Slaggy?
I think it's a bummer. I think that Blizzard is smart enough that they will learn from this experience, and, you know, they're very communicative, and they're really good at working with their fans and their community, so I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some sort of solution to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even if it's like, oh, you have to have logged in during this period to access this special store for, you know, a day or whatever, and you can't use any new coins or something. I don't know. They seem like they could work it out.
Yeah. So we also have here, and this is actually sort of a twofer, there was an article on Rock Paper Shotgun that was about the new release RimWorld. Now, RimWorld has a lot of, like, social dynamics at the core of the game. A lot of looks at sexuality and what have you. That's definitely sounds like the kind of thing I'd be super into, but upon sort of tearing down the code over at Rock Paper Shotgun, they discovered that basically the gender politics of the sexualities at play are completely fucked. And I can't really think of a better way to phrase it than that. If you look at it, you would understand, but it's pretty gross. So we basically have seen voices all over the internet trying to make sense of this. Of course, now the developers are saying that some of these things were actually just mistakes and will be patched out in the game's next patch. But most of these issues just come up with regard to the way that homosexual and bisexual characters treat one another. Spoiler alert, it's generally not very good. So definitely something that, you know, a lot of, I would say, mainstream gamers, not even on their radar, but a lot of gamers of a certain type, like us here in studio, kind of mad about this one. Slaggy, what about you?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how to feel. I wasn't really following this game until this controversy, and initially it seemed like this is a bug, and that sort of thing was like almost an excuse, like, or I mean, you know, like, it wasn't actually a bug, but there's, oh yeah, it was a bug, we didn't intend it to be that way. I heard a lot of people saying that, you know, it was very much in line with the rhetoric of online internet gaming hate group think. I mean, so it's really difficult for me to really think, you know, if it was just a code error. I mean, I can understand that, you know,
These things happen sometimes,
but the fact that bisexual erasure is such a real thing, and the fact that, oh, there were gay men, but there were only bisexual women and lesbians, right?
Yes.
That's just a little bit, I mean, like, it sounds like, you know, the fact that there are gay men in the game, like, that's cool, but the fact that there's only gay or bisexual women, it just kind of sounds like lesbian wish fulfillment on the half of heterosexual men. You know, I mean, I saw a lot of discussion on Twitter about this, relating it to pornography and how various members of different sexualities consume different types of same-sex or opposite-sex pornography.
Oh, interesting. I mean, I'm not surprised. I think that's probably a really fitting comparison, but it's interesting to think about it that way.
And, you know, just the idea of, through a male lens, that a same-sex female couple is always, like, eroticized more. You know, there's the data in this article that women are 8 times less likely to hit on men. So it reeks of some grossness to me. But again, I mean, maybe it was honestly a coding issue, but I don't know.
All right. Well, fair enough. And I'd like to move forward from this. I think that there's, you know, our listeners probably can tell exactly how we feel about this sort of nonsense. And this is definitely something we will revisit if this does not get patched out. Let's be clear. But let's move forward. We do have some unfortunate news over on
Doom and Gloom.
Yeah.
So first here we have word that Turtle Rock Studios has ended support for Evolve. This is, of course, kind of surprising. You may recall Evolve just entered into the stage 2 of its release just a few months ago, right? That was, of course, where the game went free to play, sort of changed the structure of the way DLC was handled, so it was a little less nickel and dimey. But unfortunately, there was a very heartfelt letter published by Turtle Rock Studios that made it very clear they did not want to finish working on Evolve, but 2K has said it's over. In the long term, of course, unfortunately, Turtle Rock Studios has nothing to do with the Evolve IP. It is completely 2K's call, and so even though Turtle Rock would like to continue working on it and even someday do a sequel, that will not be on the plate. If Evolve continues living, if it eventually does make its way to consoles for the Stage 2 free-to-play version, all of that is up to 2K. Turtle Rock has nothing to do with it, and I think this sucks. I think this is really depressing that this studio that made this game is having it basically torn from them on short notice. I think it's really gross. What about you, Slaggy?
Yeah, it's sad, especially, you know, the developers clearly had put a lot of passion into this project, and I mean, I it would be like, you know, you creating something that you really put a lot of work into, and then because you don't own the IP to it, they're like, nope.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally what happened. sucks.
Just the whole Evolve saga has just been very unfortunate. It was very promising, and that's a bummer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, well, the other one we have here is word that Civilization Online, which had been an Asia-only release, is shutting down in North Korea. I'm sorry, South Korea.
Oh, boy.
Right? According to the developer's website, the studio will at some point attempt to reintroduce Civ Online with a better gameplay focus, but for now, Civ Online will be ending on December 7th, which is my birthday, so that's sad.
Yeah, but I mean, we've got Civ 6, so...
Which is, yeah, super, super fantastic. All right, well, with all of this having been said, it is time for us to get down to brass tacks and talk about the Wii U. You might be wondering why we're having this discussion. What?
What year is this? We're talking about the Wii U?
All right. Basically, that's why we're talking about it. The TLDR, of course, is that, first off, there was a pretty popular rumor that quite a few sources have corroborated that Wii U production has come to an end effective November 4th, 2016. And when you look at all of the financial reports and the statements made to various media, of course, this tracks that this production would be ending at this time, especially, you know, what we know about the Switch and the fact that, you know, Nintendo is kind of pivoting its direction. It's ending the Wii branding. You know, this doesn't come as a surprise, but it does need to be noted, Nintendo representatives have stated that this is only a rumor and that it isn't true. Something that I would like to remind all of you, of course, is that this basically happens all the time. At the end of every Nintendo console's life, we hear about the end of production. Nintendo comes out and says, oh, it's not really ending on that date, and then production does end on that date. So I think it is more likely than not that the Wii U is no longer in production. If you want one, it's time to go get one. I know a lot of people are waiting for like fire truck sales and like, or I'm sorry, fire sales and like super deep discounts. I don't think that's going to happen with the Wii U. You can buy them refurbed through Nintendo officially for like $200, and I think that's probably the best deal you're ever going to see. I don't think enough Wii U's exist for them to get that deep price slash shelf clearing, you know, clearance price that a lot of people were holding out for.
Yeah.
Especially now we know what the Switch is. Games aren't going to be backwards compatible. If you're trying to play Bayonetta 2, you're trying to play Wonderful 101, you're trying to play Mario Kart 8, you might want to just get a Wii U. Xenoblade Chronicles X, it's time. Like, that's what I'm telling you. It's time. Before we get into this, though, Saggy, what do you think about word that the Wii U production is ending?
I mean, the big site that I had heard it from was Eurogamer, and let's just keep in mind that Eurogamer had put out a bunch of rumors earlier this year about the NX that all turned out to be 100% true. So, I mean,
yeah,
as
we
far
were
as...
talking about NX details, Nintendo Switch details, you know, back in what, like April, due to Eurogamer, because we hold very few outlets in high esteem as far as their rumor mills go. We do not talk about a lot of rumors on this show. But when it comes to Eurogamer, and especially the sources that they cited on that and this, they are sources that we find very trustworthy. And so that's, I wanted to add that to what you're saying, Saggy. So go from there.
So, and just the fact that the Wii U is at the end of its generation, it makes complete sense that they're not going to invest their money into producing more units when, you know, the Switch already has a pretty good word of mouth on the internet, a lot of from what I can tell, a lot of positive buzz around it. So I like you were saying, I think that Nintendo's statement is more just about them wanting to announce the end of life on their own terms and not discourage sales of things like Breath of the Wild for Wii U for people who maybe aren't intending to get a Switch.
Oh yeah, absolutely,
because
absolutely,
there are still Wii U games coming, even if it is just Breath of the Wild.
Well, and that's actually why the second part of this is, I wanted to say, is normally for an end of life episode, we would wait until the new generation has started. We would wait until, you know, we had word that it's over. The reason we're breaking from that in this case is because you look at Wii U games and they're not coming. It's Breath of the Wild and that's basically it. You know, we might see stuff like another Just Dance game, but I mean, that's it. Like, it's over. Long other, like, in every meaningful way, it's over. Like,
every time you see that, I'm thinking, like, it's over. Isn't it? Isn't it over?
That's so funny because I keep thinking every time I say it of like an old Lisa Loeb song. I'm just like, it's over. It's over. It is. Anyway, we are gigantic gay nerds. We love music. You could probably tell. Then let's move forward here with this discussion a little bit. We typically, when we do these sort of console retrospectives, did we do one for the Wii? I feel like we did. Like, it would have been like 4 years ago now.
I mean, we talked about the dawn of the Wii U, so I'm sure we talked a little bit, even if it wasn't officially Wii focused. I know we talked about the transition from Wii to Wii U.
Well, that was back when we were comfortable doing 3.5 hour shows. And even then, the Wii U rollout episode, I think, was 2 episodes. So we don't do that anymore. We break them up into smaller topics across multiple episodes. Then let's start here. What did you love about the Wii U, Saigi?
I loved that we finally had an HD Nintendo console. I love that it had some of the best games in the first party entries, or, you know, in the first party franchises, some of the best entries in those franchises. I love that it tried to do something different and tried to challenge game design. Unfortunately, third parties just really didn't step up and invest in it. People wanted to just make games the way they make the games.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and for me, I think the thing I loved about the Wii U was the possibility of it. Stuff like the asymmetrical game design, which we saw in Nintendo utilized to fantastic effect over in Nintendo Land, for example. I love the fact that it still kept that Nintendo laser focus on same room multiplayer gaming while also offering online gaming. I know that there's still a meme about like LOL Nintendo online gaming.
No, they got online right this time.
But I would mostly say they got online like 90% right. You know, I've seen people complain about the Nintendo network, but I think they're really complaining about the Nintendo like wireless wireless, like whatever wireless equipment in the Wii U, I don't think it's maybe that great, but I have mine connected to a hard line and I play Smash Online just fine. Like, I don't have like hella skippy frame rates and lag issues and stuff. So, you know, I overall thought that was very positive. I thought the eShop is absolutely fantastic. I think it's well designed. It has good usability. It's easy to find the stuff that you want to find. I think the music that plays is great. The way the music changes, you know, for like various seasons is fantastic. I actually feel like, you know, it's the probably my favorite design of the big three's like online store efforts. I definitely think it's easier to shop on the eShop on Wii U than it is on PSN or God forbid the Xbox One's online store. Like, I get that, you know, you're going all in on all media, so you're selling music and movies and TV and games, but please make it easier to find games. Jesus. Okay, well, we've talked a little bit about what did work for us on the Wii U. Let's talk about what didn't. Sagi, what didn't work for you on the Wii U?
For me personally, that's hard to say. I like my Wii U a lot. I think what, you know, maybe didn't work was, like, I mean, my things about what didn't work are more about the marketing of it and...
I mean, but that's that definitely counts,
stuff.
Bro.
I mean, there was confusion with the marketing. Not for me. I mean, like, that's why I'm saying it's not, like, it's not something that I was turned off by or confused by or misled by. But I think some weaknesses of the Wii U, if that's what we're kind of approaching it as, were the marketing. There was definite confusion. Just, I think maybe using the Wii name kind of didn't really do it any favors, because it was, despite, you know, having Wiimote functionality and stuff, it was not designed as, you know, to be another Wii. It was trying to do different things, and I think that we've already seen a Switch, pardon the pun, in the way that they're marketing the Switch. And, of course, third-party support just wasn't there. For me, that's not super important, because I don't buy nearly as many games as a lot of more serious gamers do, despite considering myself a pretty serious gamer. So, for me, just being able to buy all the first-party stuff wasn't a problem, but clearly that's not going to push units. So, were those problems for me personally? No. Were they problems for the console itself? Yes. Download times and loading times were kind of a little iffy, too, but again, that could
have
been...
Well, that's one I was going to talk about the user interface. I generally like the Wii U's user interface a lot, but it is slow, especially before that patch that came out about a year and a half into the console's life. Like, launching Wii U was painful. Like, going from, you know, startup to game would sometimes take upwards of 5 minutes. And I'm sorry, my time's pretty valuable. I don't have a ton of gaming time, so I know this makes me sound awful, but like, I need to get as much gaming in as I can when I have the time. So I cannot spend, you know, multiple minutes waiting for a goddamn main menu to load. Like, I just can't. Ain't nobody got time for that. Also, I feel like there was a real issue with the Wii U that sort of like the failure to capitalize on the system's strengths. You know, it really was like a failure to follow through. While I liked using the Nintendo gamepad as a second screen in order to play, you know, while the TV is off or while the TV is playing, you know, cable TV through my cable box, effectively, you know, multitasking, I feel like they never really revisited a lot of the core ideas of like asymmetrical game design. You know, they dabbled with it in like the Wii Party and in you know, Mario Party, but for the most part, it wasn't really an element present through the whole generation.
Yeah, even in their first party titles, arguably.
Well, absolutely, and that's what I mean. Outside of the party games, you know, the Wario Party game, Game and Wario, I think it was called, like, outside of those, we didn't see a whole lot of asymmetrical design, and I thought that was a real shame, because that could have been, you know, a very unique Nintendo-only thing that they could have sold. And it's one, you know, I've been talking for years now, that I find incredibly compelling as a mechanic.
I mean, thankfully, the Switch, there's no reason that the Switch can't do that, you know, being handheld.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Having,
you know,
my
we
screen
don't...
having Boos and yours having Mario, Luigi, Toad, and Peach in a castle.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no reason to think that you won't be able to, you know, go to a buddy's house that has their Switch connected to the TV and have, you know, four other people who have their Switches and they're using them just as, you know, handheld consoles. And, you know, there's no reason to think we won't all be able to play together and in doing so have asymmetrical gameplay. But But, you know, it's not encouraging that we didn't see Nintendo follow through on that when I think a lot of people, especially after the fact, you know, initially Nintendo Land was shat on a lot because, you know, people were, oh, what's this kitty, LOL, stupid graphics. First off, Nintendo Land is effing gorgeous. Second, I think over time, most people, or at least more than not, have really come around to the fact that there's some great game design concepts in Nintendo Land. Like, it's really a fantastic little collection of experiences.
We also know you have the hots for Monita.
I do not have the hots for Monita.
No, but Monita's super adorable. I love her.
I would agree with that, though. I'm kind of mad I don't have a Monita plushie.
Or a Monita amiibo.
Yeah, right?
You know, something else that I feel like it's impossible to not think about the Switch now that we know exactly what it is for the most part. It's something that kind of goes with the confusion or the not being marketed correctly is the fact that the gamepad seems like such a mandatory part of the experience rather than something that could enhance experiences. I think that the design of the Switch being modular is a different response to that because, you know, this looks like a big Game Gear, really.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, let's move forward here from this. You know, that's the real big issue I have with the Wii U. I could just sum it up as failure to launch. It's tons of great ideas that just never came together. I want to go off script for a moment, though, and I want to ask you, because I know I asked you this in our Nintendo Switch episode, but I'd like to ask you it again. To what degree are you personally, Slagkick, impressed or unimpressed by the fact that Nintendo has stuck out the Wii U? It was, we can now say in retrospect, unfortunately, it was effectively dead in the water. I still say that a Nintendo Wii U is worth owning. I think that, as you said, a lot of franchises, Nintendo first-party franchises, have like their pinnacle highlight games of their series for this console. I think it's worth owning. But we can now look back and say, 2 years in, it was dead. Nintendo probably could have, some people think should have, moved on. They opted not to, though. They stuck it out. By the time the Switch launches, the Wii U will have been around for what, like 4.5 years?
Yeah, so a shorter generation, definitely.
Slightly shorter generation, though. You look at stuff like the Game Boy Advance, they've had lifespans like that. The Nintendo 64, lifespan not entirely dissimilar to that.
Like a 5 year or so.
But that's my point. You know, it's now a 6 month shorter lifespan rather than a multiple year shorter lifespan. And, you know, a lot of people initially were saying, you know, if Nintendo doesn't try to stick it out, I'll never support them. I haven't heard back from those people. But what's your take? How do you feel about the fact that Nintendo stuck it out as recently as, you know, a month and a half, or not even a month and a half ago? Like last month, we got Color Splash Paper Mario, which, you know, while a lot of people are really disappointed that it's not a thousand-year door clone, actually getting a lot of very positive feedback. How do you feel about the fact that Nintendo stuck it out?
I think that even though people wanted them to move on earlier, that whatever they had next would not have been nearly as innovative as the Switch is going to be. And so, like, they would have maybe had something like a Switch, but wouldn't have been ready. It would have flopped hard. And, like, I think that probably to the investors, you know, more on the business side, I think Nintendo really proved that, you know, yes, it was not the greatest success, but we, you know, we're not going to just abandon it. We have, you know, a commitment to the consumers out there, so... I ultimately think that, you know, Nintendo really, I think it was a better business choice in the long run to kind of ride it out.
Excellent. Excellent. And do you, to your knowledge, I know that you know some more casual gamers. I don't want to be clear. When I call people casual gamers, I literally am only using that as a quantifier to how seriously they take games. I do not think people who are casuals are somehow lesser than, you know, someone actually called me out a few episodes ago for using the term hater, in which that case I literally just meant people who have dissenting views. I did not mean to imply a negative connotation. And I don't hear when I say casual, but I know that, like, Slaggy, you have, like, family members who are casual gamers. You have friends who are casual gamers that you have on, like, your Facebook and your personal, like, real life. Have you seen anything about the Switch for them, and do you think they have positive or negative feelings about how the Wii U turned out?
Not really on either count. I mean, people who are more on that that casual side for me are really, like, just playing, like, mobile games and stuff, you know? So I think they aren't the type to go out and really seek gaming news and follow sales information. I mean, I know that my family has enjoyed playing Wii U. When I, you know, before I moved out on my own, I had my Wii U at my family's house, and so, you know, they had fun with it. But I think these sorts of things about successes and failures and kind of, like, anticipation, at least for the people who don't really consider themselves gamers in my life, it's not even something they really take into consideration. I mean, for my family, for example, it would be like, oh, it's Nintendo, that's where Mario and Zelda are. So, I mean, there's maybe a certain amount of brand loyalty to Nintendo since they've been around so long, and, you know, Mario and, to a slightly lesser degree, Zelda and Link are so iconic, and even, like, Kirby, you know, like it or not, Nintendo has iconic franchises and characters, Pikachu, Pokemon. So, I mean, whether you think that Nintendo is for kids or that it's sanitized or too sugar sweet saccharine, they have the advantage of this huge stable of franchises.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, well, then I'd like to move forward. I want to talk.
To tie it back into the Wii U and its kind of demise, I think that's the main reason why Nintendo was able to kind of prolong the life of the Wii U as long as they did, because between things like, you know, the Mario and Zelda games and Pokemon titles and Kirby titles and new things like Splatoon and partnerships like Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Sharp FE, like they had just enough to keep the value there. Bayonetta 2, of course. So for the people for whom these games really mattered, like, having a Wii U was non-negotiable.
Yeah, I would personally, of course, agree with that. Then I want to talk here now about the games. You know, obviously we always say, you know, a console's never, you know, any better or worse than the games it allows you to play. So in discussing this, you know, I want to talk a little bit about our favorite Wii U games and experiences, but I thought a good starting point would be this Kotaku article. This is a part of their The Bests line, and what they basically do is they look at for like the 12 best game experiences on each console for this series of articles, and they update them anytime like a new marquee title releases. I find that endlessly interesting, but what I found really interesting about the Wii U one in particular is that these are all games I would personally describe as like a must own.
Yeah, it's a pretty good list.
And so with that, you know, I'd like to start here, and Saigi, I'd love to hear your thoughts. We're going to start with Mario 3D World. Have you played Mario 3D World?
Meow meow.
Yeah, this is the one I call Super Mario Cats. You know, they pointed out as like the number one like must buy. What was your experience with Mario Cats?
Probably the best designed Mario game. I mean, and that being said, you know, we talked about last time when we were curious about the Switch Mario title about how if it might be a little more traditional in terms of not being like straight up playing around with physics and galaxy stuff in the way that Galaxy did on the Wii and Galaxy 2. But there's just so many great gameplay ideas. I love that it really feels like in some ways a return to some of the things that Mario 2 was doing. And I remember describing it. There was one time that the two of us were playing with Sulker about a year or so ago, and we were just kind of like, yeah, this really takes like the greatest ideas from all of the 2D and 3D Mario games to this point and puts them all in one package. And the presentation's cute. I mean, to me, I like cute. I like, you know, cat suits. I like Mario being like, let's go. You know, I find that charming. That's part of what I like about Mario. It's just very cute and fun. And, you know, even the Goombas are cute, even though they're villains, you know, and the Piranha Plants in the Koopa Troopas. Like, and so the fact that, you know, they're cat suits and climbing on the walls and, you know, that combined with like really fun gameplay, I would not hesitate to say it's one of the best 3D Mario titles.
Awesome. And I would agree with that. I think it's an absolutely
even if it's not Mario
game.
Universe, like everyone was kind of waiting for.
Yeah. And, you know, I also have to give a special shout out to the fact that it's easily the most gorgeous Mario game. Like, that is a beautiful effing game, okay? Then I want to ask next about Smash Brothers. You know, we talk about Smash Brothers a lot here on the show. We're obviously huge fans. Now that we've had a year with it, what do you think?
It's only been a year? I thought it's been
It's actually been like 2 years, but,
yeah.
But I want to make it clear. Now that we've had a substantial amount of time with it, what do you think?
I think it's the best Smash game so far. I think that I can't go back to the other ones. I mean, I can, but it just doesn't play the way that I'm used to. I think they got it right this time. I think the balance is really good. And I mean, there have been some patches literally that have kind of upset the the balance. I mean, you remember when Corrin was first introduced, and
along with Bayonetta.
Yeah, and I remember very shortly, the week probably that Corrin was introduced, I was hanging out with Point Narf, one of our listeners over from the Tables, Ladders, and Podcast. And he was just devastating me with Corrin. I mean, he's also a really good Smash player, but I mean, like, there's just no working around it. Like, I could not manage. But once the balancing has gone in and, you know, where the game is at now, I think it's really the best Smash game. And I think the fact that it's so online featured allows it to have these balancing patches where, you know, on original Smash games, it kind of just is what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, maybe for some Smash players, particularly those who are very attached to Melee, that is upsetting. But, I mean, in arcades, balancing patches happen all the time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I just feel like it's finally, like, on par with being, like, a Street Fighter or a Tekken in terms of, like, you know, it's a fighting game. It's a silly fighting game in some ways. It is a whimsical fighting game. But I feel like it plays so much better than any of the other ones. And I know that's not a popular opinion.
You know, I think it is maybe not a super popular opinion, but I think it is more widely accepted than we expected it to be. I thought that the Melee diehards were going to stick by Melee forever, but, you know, when you look at attendance of Smash tournaments, you know, attendance does still exist. It is still up there. You know, certainly more people turn up for Melee for reasons I still don't really understand, but, you know, slowly but surely that Smash 4 audience is growing. And, you know, the fact that right now, at least, the only way to play it is either on a 3DS, which not my ideal, or the Wii U is, you know, to me, a major point in favor of the Wii U. I think, for me, Smash is a game that's worth owning a Wii U for, frankly. If I had no other games but Smash, I would still be okay with that. But I want to move forward and talk about the Wind Waker HD remake. And this, for me, or remaster, and this, for me, is actually, like, the one game on this list that I'm like, eh, and not even because, you know, I have a problem with the game. It's a beautiful remaster. Game is, you know, fantastic as it ever was. But I didn't feel like they did enough to improve it. You know, a lot of the problematic issues with the game design are still inherent. You know, they're still there. But it is certainly very pretty. It's easier to play than it was on the GameCube. So, like, what are your thoughts of the Wind Waker HD remaster?
Oh, just so pretty. I mean, the original game was already pretty pretty. And, you know, we've seen over the, like, past 15 years, well, I mean, maybe a little less than that, you know, as we would follow, like, Dolphin emulators and stuff, and some of the things that were possible to do with shading and stuff. You know how to describe that better, but I feel like it took something that was already a really beautiful game and allowed it to fully be presented in the way that I think it was always intended to be.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I remember a lot of people actually were really upset about the way the HD remaster looked, but when they were first showing footage of it.
Oh yeah, well, and it almost had that sort of almost like the look of like clay come to life in those early shots. You know, it looked a lot more like physical based than, you know, the very cartoony way that the GameCube game upscaled looked. And I think that a lot of people were thrown off by that. But then when it released, it's like, wow, this is gorgeous. I think most people agreed.
Yeah. And I mean, one of my favorite Zelda games, and, you know, they fixed a little bit about the treasure maps and all of that stuff. It's still a little bit, you know, much, but, you know, really the definitive way to play that game now, I think.
And, you know, it's funny because they call out the Wind Waker HD as the sort of Zelda pick here. I would actually have picked the Twilight Princess HD remaster. That's the one that, for me, brought the game from, like, oh, I like this, but, like, there's just too much crap in the way for me to really get into it. Even though they fixed less in that game, I actually thought that Twilight Princess came out for the better in the remaster.
Do you think that had to do with not being distracted by Waggle this time?
No, I mean, I've played Twilight Princess on GameCube, and I don't view Waggle as a negative. I do not view Waggle as a distraction. I view Waggle as a positive. And still, I found Twilight Princess on the Wii, and, you know, part of it is probably that when I got it, you know, I had just gotten my first HD TV. The game looked like absolute crap, like, to the point where sometimes things were so pixelated, I literally didn't know what I was looking at. I think that was a much bigger issue for me than, you know, Waggle or whatever. I love motion controls, especially in Zelda, where, you know, you get stuff like aim your bow and arrow. Like, to me, you know, motion control aiming is so much more precise than aiming with a stick. I can do it so much faster. I absolutely, absolutely prefer my Zelda games with motion control. But I just thought that Twilight Princess HD, you know, brought up to HD, I think Twilight Princess really sings as a game. Did you have any experience with Twilight Princess HD?
Yeah, I think I was able to enjoy it a lot more. And
it sounds like for you, the waggle was an issue, which is perfectly fine. You know, it's okay. You can own that.
No, the waggle was an issue with Skyward Sword for me. That was like unsurpassable for me because I couldn't do the waggle right. I thought the waggle on original Twilight Princess Wii was fine, but I don't know. Like, you know, my favorite Zelda games are like Majora's, 3D Zelda games are like Majora's Mask and Wind Waker, which are played more traditionally. So for me, it was like, okay, yeah, this just feels more like the type of Zelda that I'm used to. And, you know, we're looking like we're having a little bit more of a traditional Zelda experience control-wise with Breath of the Wild as well. So I agree that both HD ports were great, and I'm glad that they both had the opportunity to come to life on the Wii U.
Indeed. All right, well, then let's move on and talk about the next one. This is a big deal, actually. This is Splatoon. And Splatoon is one of those games that, you know, a lot of people thought was going to flop. There was a very popular thread on GAF at the time before release, like, what's the under-over percentage on it selling over 100,000 units? And now that's laughable because this thing has sold millions of units worldwide. It's a shooter that is popular in Japan, and like in Japan, people buy Wii U consoles to play Splatoon. So, Sagi, I know that you got a lot out of Splatoon. I remember you talking about it being a shooter that you were into, which was like a shock. What do you have to say about it?
I think that, I mean, part of it's just that it's the fun of the entire thing. You know, you're being a squid kid, splattering paint. And I'm not saying that, like, oh, dude, bro, shooters turn me off necessarily 100% of the time. But, of course, Nintendo being Nintendo made it so that it's fun to play. I mean, a lot of times I don't find first-person shooter games fun to play. It's like, oh, you gun down. You're getting gunned down. You're getting gunned down. Respawn, respawn, respawn. And I mean, there's still, you know, obviously you get respawn in Splatoon, but I think they put the amount of attention they put into it made it very accessible. And I mean, that's what I like about Nintendo, is they, like, especially for a genre that I typically don't really care for a lot.
Indeed. So I, you know, Splatoon, and I think you just summed it all up, Slaggy, but, you know, it's between what you just said and, you know, what we know about its popularity in Japan, I just, Splatoon is such a big deal. It was born on the Wii U. You know, interestingly, I think everyone agrees now, when we first played it, I think most of us switched motion controls off, but now people who play Splatoon at the high level, people who play a lot of Splatoon, they swear by the motion controls.
Interesting.
Most people now feel like it brings it sort of the closest to playing a like mouse and keyboard first-person shooter that a console has ever gotten.
Huh.
And, you know, especially in light of, you know, the great division of Overwatch players, you know, something you see a lot of discussion about in gaming circles is, like, you know, PC gamers who feel like the game's almost fundamentally different on console, not bad or broken, just fundamentally like a different game, because some strategies straight up do not work on a controller, whereas some things that, like, you could never get away with on PC, like, are like key strategies on console just because of the difference in reaction time, the difference in shooting precision.
And that's, that's interesting too, because I don't play with motion controls. I haven't played Splatoon in quite a while, honestly, but Splatoon is one of the few shooter games that I find that I can do with a regular controller. Destiny is the only other shooting game that I've been able to play that I feel has gotten controller controls right. Otherwise, I swear by mouse and keyboard. It, like, just instinctively makes more sense for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, what Bungie did with Destiny is something magic, but this is not Destiny, Bowie, and it probably never will be. So, yeah, Splatoon, something very special. We already know it's coming for Switch. And that's something interesting here. You know, most of these games that we've talked about here today are Wii U exclusives. When the Wii U goes away, the ability to play these games goes away for newcomers. Splatoon, fortunately, we know it's coming for Switch. Nintendo has not kept that a secret at all.
Whether it's Splatoon or Splatoon.
Well, right? I think that Splatoon, be that with the two or not, is like the most likely candidate for a launch game. You want to move new units of a console in Japan, Splatoon is going to be the way to do it.
Get a Monster Hunter in there.
Dude, if they could launch with a port of Monster Hunter Double Cross and Splatoon, like, Japan just got open their wallets. If you can get Dragon Quest in there somehow, that's going to be like, you know, they'll have fucking PlayStation 4 North American sales number in Japan. I swear to God, like, that would be a coup. I'd like to move forward, though, because we're getting a little bloated here. Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp FE. I think this is an amazing game. It is basically a Persona game. Just the only way it's not is it by name. what did you think, Slaggy?
I would agree with that assessment. It's it is a crossover with Fire Emblem, but I mean, in a lot of ways, it really is a Persona game. And I think that, I mean, I remember when it came out, we were like, oh, we want Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp AC for Animal Crossing.
Yes, I still want that.
With a little Tom Nook.
Dude, I would play Tokyo Mirage Sessions Sharp anything. Like, you, as far as I'm concerned, this should be a new series, you know, Persona style, and just do a different crossover every time. I will play them all. Like, you do one where everyone's dressed as, like, Mario characters. You have, like, a friend whose performa is, like, Waluigi. I'm so into it.
Oh, that would be a fan favorite.
All right.
And, you know, something that's I think is interesting is that, you know, this definitely only, I would say, had a very specific audience. But for me, it did a lot more than the mainline Shin Megami Tensei games, which, I mean, I've given a fair chance to. But, I mean, honestly, like, there's something about the mainline Shin Megami Tensei games that just don't quite do it for me the way that Persona games do.
And I think that's true for a lot of North American gamers, truly.
And so Tokyo Mirage Sessions is just, like, completely everything I like from a Mega Ten game.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, the reason why we're talking about a lot of these games is especially more stuff like the Zelda HD, Mario 3D World, Tokyo Mirage, because these are games that will be hard to play coming very soon. So they're games that we absolutely think, like, if you're into these genres, you're into these kinds of experiences, if you don't have a Wii U, I think it's time to start looking for one, because there's even if it were only these 12 games, and it's not, but even if it were only these 12 games, they're games worth playing. And I feel like that is absolutely essential in keeping mind when I say Bayonetta 2. Bayonetta 2 is a game that would not exist if not for Nintendo and the situation they found themselves in with the Wii U. You know, they wanted to, when they were first, you know, revealing the Wii U, and then, you know, that first year of reveals, it was clear, you know, that they needed to capture that hardcore gamer mindset. They had to get the attention from those kinds of gamers. So they threw their money where their mouth was, and they funded Bayonetta 2. Like, that still baffles me. It still boggles my mind that, you know, Sega and Platinum tried to get Bayonetta 2 made. They talked to Sony, they talked to Microsoft, nothing could be done. Nintendo are the ones that stepped in and saved this game's life. And rather than just doing, like, a summary of the events of the first game, they also funded a port of the first game. Unbelievable to me. Even still, this will, the morning of the Bayonetta 2 announcement, and I appreciate that this says a lot about me as a human being, but that will probably always be, like, one of my fondest memories of my relationship with my ex, who I was with for almost 7 years. He, like, made a joke, because he was not a big Nintendo fan, and he was just like, oh yeah, well, wake me up in the morning if there's an announcement I give a fuck about. And it's like, at the time, it was like, okay, well, that's obviously not gonna happen. No, Bayonetta came out, and it was not even, like, a big tease. It's just, like, the symbol and the icon and, like, her, like, feet as she's walking away. And I woke him up, and we both literally screamed in joy. Like, that was, like, it says actually a lot about that relationship. That's probably the happiest I was ever in that entire relationship. But Bayonetta 2, man, just as a game, as a concept, this is just such a win for me, for Nintendo, on every level. And the fact that the game came out as good as or better than the first Bayonetta, which is already, like, the high watermark for character action games, is just freaking unbelievable to me. Slaggy, what do you think about Bayo 2?
Oh, I mean, it wouldn't have happened without Nintendo. And I mean, I remember people being like, and being, like, really salty about it. It's like, fuck you very much. You want your favorite Gunwitch back? Well, excuse me. I mean, I know that was mostly just nonsense, but, like, I just did not understand after they saved it. And it was clearly revealed that they could not have made Bayonetta 2 without Nintendo. People are still like, eh. Because, I mean, Bayonetta and Bayonetta 2 are still, like, you know, together, like, untouchable in a lot of ways. I mean, maybe they're definitely not perfect games by any mean, but, I mean, as for what they are, they're just delights.
Yeah, absolutely. Nintendo Land, next game on the list. We've already talked about why it's so special today. Did you have anything you wanted to add about it?
Just that it's a shame that it didn't really serve as a springboard as I hoped it would. I hoped that it was going to be like, oh, we're going to see more titles play with these ideas.
All right, well, then let's talk a little bit about Pikmin 3. Pikmin and 3 is, you know, the third Pikmin game. Pikmin is generally thought of as sort of the Nintendo version of real-time strategy. I still think that is absolutely applicable. I think Pikmin 3 is the best the Pikmin series has ever been. I think the graphics are surprisingly well done. Like, it's actually kind of a beautiful little game. Tons of personality and charm. Fantastically designed game. And obviously, you know, Pikmin 1 and 2 came out a long time before Pikmin 3. So it was nice to see the series get a revival. And again, you know, only playable on the Wii U. And this is one that I do think we'll see a Pikmin game on the Switch. I don't think it's going to be a port of this. So
yeah.
I think that's makes this like a definite candidate for, like, if you're interested in popping into the Wii U waters, take a look at this one. Anything to add?
No, just that Pikmin games are always a delight. Very cute. And, you know, getting your Pikmin to accomplish a task is so rewarding. It's one of those things that you have to play it to, really. And I think Pikmin 3 was definitely the most user-friendly.
I would agree with that.
And that's always a high point for me.
The next game on the list is Super Mario Maker. This was a big deal, I think, for most of us. Taught a lot of us a lot about game design real quick. Just a really fantastic game. Going to be available soon on the 3DS in a slightly toned-down version, and feature-wise. A lot of people initially thinking this game was going to get a port to Switch, but now that we know that Switch will not be touchscreen centric, though there are rumors, and we'll talk about them a little later, that the device will have rudimentary touchscreen support. What do you think about this and the idea that the Wii U might be the only way to play the full version of Mario Maker?
I think it's really, in a lot of ways, the killer app of the Wii U, if that's true.
Well, right, and the touchscreen use for course design is so intuitive. It really clicks into place, and I've seen a lot of Sony fans in particular, no offense, like, I'm not trying to call anyone out, but talk about, like, oh, well, Little Big Planet did all the world creation stuff before Mario Maker. But for me, that really highlights, like, how much more intuitive Mario Maker is than Little Big Planet. Really highlights why you need a touchscreen to do this kind of experience right and make it user-friendly and make it fun, even just to create, it's fun. Do you have any thoughts on that, the use of the touchscreen in particular?
Yeah, just that I crave something as, you know, someone who's interested in game design and development that is as intuitive and easy to use as Mario Maker, and I haven't found it yet.
And for those of you who are wondering why, you know, we're making all these assumptions, we do know now that the Nintendo Switch dock does not support, like, TV play while you're using the Switch, like, as a handheld. So even if the handheld version does have a touch screen, that's going to be your single screen to use. You're not going to be able to, like, use it and the TV at the same time. And as a result, maybe if they do Mario Maker on the Switch, you could do it as a single screen experience, only while portable, and then maybe you could only do, you know, stage play, or not only do stage plays, but while connected to the TV, stage plays would be the only option available to you. But a lot of people think that Nintendo's probably not trying to go for game designs that, like, you can only play on the go or while at your TV. So,
right.
You know, there's a lot of speculation, a lot of people up in the air, and the rumor mill has just dried up on Super Mario Maker. A lot of the rumor mill folks have said that they think that that project became Mario Maker on 3DS. So, you know, definitely a little upsetting. Like Saigi said, I think this is something that a lot of us crave and need. I'm going to try to wrap this conversation up in the next 10 minutes or so. So we're going to bang out the next three real quick. We have Mario Kart 8, which I would say is a must play because it is, to me, Mario Kart as a formula perfected.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know how they improve on it from here.
It's just the smoothest play experience. It's gorgeous. And like you were saying, I mean, I don't know how they could possibly make it better.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of us think that the Mario Kart 9 or whatever for Switch will just be Kart 8 with new tracks and new characters, because where do you go from here? We also have the Wonderful 101. This is, of course, a lightweight character action game developed by Platinum, who obviously were also behind Bayonetta. This is a weird game because it is a character action game, but it also has, like, some, like, real-time strategy style elements almost. And I think that that's a really hard thing to communicate. The game has a huge, huge learning curve. It's one of those things for most of us, I think you don't even really get how to play the game until you've finished it the first time. And then on replays, it's like, oh my God, this is like Bayonetta meets Devil May Cry meets you know, Ninja Gaiden with just a touch of Pikmin. And it's like a really weird experience that is also like very, very deep. Like it's a very deep experience. Psyche, what's your call on Wonderful 101?
A little tricky for me. I'm not as skilled at it, but I mean, it just it goes to show that Platinum and Nintendo had a very positive relationship. And, you know, people might say, oh, well, only Orion, but no, I mean, they brought Platinum in to help out with Star Fox Zero. So, you know, I think this is just something that, like, Nintendo gave Platinum the freedom to just have the fun that Platinum likes to do. And I don't think it could have worked on any other console.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. That, for me, is one of the big losses. I can't imagine Wonderful 101 getting a Switch port, and I think it's a total bummer that this game is going to be lost to the sands of time. Last on the list is Zombie U. And this is interesting because Zombie U is now available on Xbox One, PS4, PC. I still
just
think...
As Zombie,
of course. But I still feel like it really shines on Wii U. You know, when you go to the menu to, like, do your, like, inventory management, like, you don't even, like, go to a menu. You literally just look down at your pad, and if you get attacked while you're doing that, you're boned. I feel like that is... And I've played this game. I've put hours into this game. Like, it always kept me on the edge of my seat because I always felt like it's sort of very immersive in that sense of, like, oh, I need something for my bag. I can't just pause to, like, get a breather. I can't just go to my menu to use my health item and know that the zombie horde is going to stay at bay. Like, you always have to be aware and attentive. And while that's more stressful than some people might like, I did find it very immersive for the fantasy they were trying to sell. What were your thoughts on Zombie U?
This is just, I think Ubisoft really tried more than most people to really make a game that took advantage of what the Wii U was trying to do. And, you know, even though maybe this genre of game typically isn't for me, I definitely appreciate that they really tried, you know, to use the asymmetrical sort of design. And like you said, you can't just pause the game and do inventory management. Like, you gotta keep your wits about you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, then let's real quick. Do you have any favorite Wii U games that we didn't just discuss?
I mean, I definitely have to give a shout out to New Super Mario Brothers U and New Super Luigi U.
Yes.
I mean, those, of course, are fantastic. But I mean, that really is a pretty fantastic list.
Well, and you know, I have to say, I really need to bring up Donkey Kong Country Returns Tropical Freeze. I think is an absolutely astonishing game. Some of the best 2D level design I've ever seen. Just absolutely, it's a gorgeous looking game. I think it's great. Like you said, New Mario U. Amazing level designs, especially the Luigi U expansion. It's like, are you kidding me with this? Like, this is next level even for you guys. Like, I'm so impressed. Yoshi's Woolly World, fantastic experience, a ton of fun. Xenoblade Chronicles X is an amazing RPG. Captain Toad Treasure Tracker, super fun. Like, there are so many great games on this thing that I worry, you know, aren't going to end up anywhere else. Hyrule Warriors is another great example, although is a 3DS version available. It's still a downgrade from the Wii U version. So, you know, just a lot of fun. I know a lot of people who have never been into a Musou game before that who did get into that one, which is always a something that is like, you should be aware of this. Like, this should put it on your radar.
I mean, you really had that Nintendo polish on what Tecmo Koei Tecmo does.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Of course, it is notable, you know, we're talking all about Nintendo first-party games and games that they worked with third parties on.
And I mean, it's kind of telling that Hyrule Warriors is the only one that's really a third-party-ish game that is in the list that sold over a million, I believe.
Yeah, I think Wii U or Zombie U also would fall into that, but I don't know that for fact. I think it would, though. I would have to look at the numbers. I feel like it was up there, though. I think it did all right over the life of the title. Do you have any memorable Wii U moments, like memories, Slaggy? I know for me, I'd probably call out the first Nintendo E3 at Best Buy event. You know, we talked about it here on the show. We got to play, like, Kart 8 early. It was just a really very positive experience. I played Kart 8. You played
Cats.
3D World. Yeah, Cats. I thought that was really cool. Showed an initiative from Nintendo, really reaching out to audiences
really
they weren't previously.
Switch,
yeah, me too. Well, they have said that they will after that June 12th press event that
January 12th
press event that there will be opportunities for the public to try Switch after that in order to like understand the concept. So definitely looking forward to that.
I really have a strong memory of launch night, just spending hours and hours and hours playing.
I did my pre-order at Walmart specifically so that we could pick it up at midnight and bring it back and play until 4 in the morning. And that's so, I agree. Yeah, that's a very positive memory for me too. Man, I can't even tell you how many parties where we've had non-gamers come out or casual gamers come out and, you know, play Mario Chase or Luigi's Ghost Mansion for hours because that asymmetrical gameplay is just such a great hook for people who don't normally game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say these days Jackbox is kind of taking over as the party game, but yeah, I mean, it definitely was a party staple to the point where things like when we had our Party Games Games Party, people were having a lot more fun with stuff like that than like Mario Party.
Yeah,
which
absolutely.
That was kind of maybe one of my little disappointments. But I would say also just the initial rush of Mario Maker and seeing all the great content that everyone made and like me being able to play with levels. I mean, that just was like it felt full circle as a Mario fan. It was a perfect way to honor the 30th anniversary.
Indeed. And I want to ask real quick, did you have any disappointing Wii U games? Like, were there games that just kind of disappointed you at all?
Yeah, Mario Party 10.
And that's funny because I still think Mario Party 10 is pretty cool. But for me, I think probably Devil's Third is my big disappointment. Just did not come out the way I had hoped it would. Pokken was a big disappointment for me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I really was expecting more. But, you know, overall, I thought there were way more hits than misses. And I think that Nintendo doesn't get nearly enough credit for how strong the lineup they got is.
Yeah. Could I call out some third-party VIPs, in my opinion?
If you'd like to, but keep it short.
So, you know, the whole idea of there's no third-party support for the Wii U is kind of a meme at this point. But, I mean, we have Ubisoft, even if by the end of it, it was just mostly just dances. You know, Ubisoft, we've seen definitely committed to Nintendo. They were one of the first to say we've got Just Dance coming to the NX before Switch was even, you know, officially unveiled. We had Rayman Legends. We had, you know, Zombie U. And they really tried to bring stuff like Watch Dogs and Assassin's Creed and stuff. So they really, of a lot of studios, compared to a lot of studios, they really did give a lot of support. I would say that Activision also was a really good friend to Nintendo. You know, you saw a lot of the Call of Duty titles coming out for Wii U, even if it wasn't maybe, you know, the ultimate versions. Skylanders had a very successful run. And, you know, Activision just has so much in terms of, you know, stuff that they publish that they don't develop internally necessarily. So that, you know, there were definitely a lot of Activision support. But I think the biggest friendship, aside from, you know, maybe like people like Sega or like Atlus, would be Bandai Namco. I mean, they just thinking about how much they did for Smash, that Bandai Namco and Nintendo are really good friends now. And so I think that was one of the most valuable partnerships to deepen from the Wii U era.
Absolutely.
And Koei Tecmo, Tecmo Koei to a degree.
Well, and I was actually going to wrap this up with your overall thoughts, and I think you're basically doing that right now. So, like, do you have any additional overall thoughts to wrap this conversation up?
Wii U was not a mistake. It was not perfect in a lot of ways, but I think it holds a special spot in my heart with things like the GameCube, which was also very much misunderstood during its time. And I think that history's going to look back and say that the Wii U was all right.
I agree. You know, I've seen a lot of people on, like, Gaff and what have you, Wii U haters, who are like, oh, this is basically Nintendo's Dreamcast. And I'm like, you say that like it's a bad thing, but here we are 20 years later. People talk about
much.
The Dreamcast with absolute adoration.
Who hates the Dreamcast?
Right? So, and that's how I feel about it. Like you said, GameCube,
I
would
say Dreamcast. I have
more negative
feelings about the PS2 because it killed the Dreamcast.
Dude, right? The Dreamcast itself, man, when you consider that it was only on the market for what, like a year and a half, like you look at its killer ass lineup of games, like, nah, dude, being compared to the Dreamcast is, that's praise as far as I'm concerned. concerned. So, yeah, my overall thoughts, I think that Nintendo, I would not call the Wii U a mistake actually, but I would describe the Wii U as a mistake Nintendo needed to make. I think that it put them on the right track. I'm glad they made it. I think it has amazing software support. I think it's worth owning for everyone serious about gaming. But I more importantly think that it positioned Nintendo to take the next step with the Switch that they're doing that I think will overall be incredibly positive for them.
It's a console for Nintendo fans. If you like Nintendo, I mean, you need a Wii U.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Anything else, or should we move on?
Nope, let's go ahead and move on.
All right, we got a couple of rumors here, as we had hinted, so let's get into that in...
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So this first one is a big deal. You know, in order to officially get the word on the Nintendo Switch, we will need to wait until January 12th. Yes, I do have multiple calendars and timers already counting down. But according to various sources for Eurogamer, as well as some people like Emily Rogers and Laura, whom, you know, we've been talking about for the last few episodes. Emily Rogers, we've been talking about for years. She is someone whom we take her word very seriously. We have gotten some hints about what to expect. Allegedly, the Nintendo Switch has a 6.2-inch screen that will be featuring a 720p resolution. A lot of people are, you know, noting that actually makes a lot of sense, because that would be a you know, much easier upscale than if this thing were little guy were trying to push, you know, a 1080p or something. Also, supposedly it will feature a multi-touch screen on the device. That means it will be a capacitive touch rather than resistive. A lot of people were noting, you know, previously capacitative is like the one that you can touch with your finger, and resistive is the kind that is better with like a stylus. So definitely some interesting stuff going on there. We also have word that apparently the Joy-Cons will have motion control built in, and that they will have short-range IR sensors in the base of them. So definitely some very interesting stuff. Supposedly the top of the bezel of the Switch's screen, the reason why it peaks
I thought it was bezel.
It might be bezel. I've always said bezel, but it might be bezel.
Bezel sounds like a Pokemon.
Either bezel. Way, it does. Supposedly the reason why the top of it sits out when the console is docked is because it has IR signals or receivers in the top of it, similar to the way that the Wii U sensor bar works. You know, it has little IR sensors that you have to be able to be seen. And I saw a lot of people complaining, like, oh, it really bothers me that the top of the handheld unit peeks out when it's docked. Well, if it's true that that's where the IR sensors are for the console, that would at least make sense for why it's designed that way. What do you think about these rumors, Slaggy?
Pretty likely. I mean, like I said, Eurogamer, you go back and look at Eurogamer's early leaks and rumors about the Switch.
A lot of them corroborated by Emily Rogers.
Every single one, and there was an article in particular that I was looking at a few weeks ago, you know, just right after the Switch announcement was announced, and I was like, yeah, like, they called everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the exciting things about that for me is that I'm in the middle of planning a trip to Japan in the first half of 2017, and supposedly the Switch is going to be region-free. You know, all of these sources are saying region-free, region-free, region-free. I'm having my fingers crossed, because it would be great if I could take my Switch after it comes out to Japan, get some Japanese games and play them while I'm there. That would be cool. I hope I don't have to buy a second console while I'm there.
But you would.
But I would. The other big rumor we have is that apparently the name of the next Tomb Raider game leaked because someone was working on a PowerPoint presentation on the subway in Montreal. These kinds of leaks do happen. They often turn out correct. Apparently, Eidos Montreal is currently working on Shadow of the Tomb Raider. Kotaku notes that they had also previously heard this name floated around for the next game in the Tomb Raider series. So, definitely interesting, and it seems to me very likely. Any thoughts?
Yeah, it's just funny that these leaks keep happening, because... yeah, like, the Ubisoft leaks for Assassin's Creed were from Montreal. It's like, so what's next? Let's, everyone in Montreal, keep your eyes peeled.
Yep. All right, well, with all that having been said, let's start wrapping up by winding down and talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
Let's see. This week, I played a little bit of WoW. Not as much as I would have liked, but it's just been a very busy couple weeks in my IRL life. I'm really excited for the upcoming WoW patches. They've been talking about it at BlizzCon, though. Excited for flying and Legion content, going to Argus eventually. Just really, really exciting stuff. I've also been playing World of Final Fantasy, which is freaking adorable. The designs are super cute of everything in that entire game. And most importantly, it feels like playing a 16-bit JRPG with 2016 art and design sensibilities. It, to me, is very much best of both worlds. I've seen this game get, like, kind of middling reviews, and to me, I'm like, did you guys not play JRPGs in the 16-bit era, like, at the time? Because this is so much better than so many of them were, while also being the perfect love letter to those games. I am super feeling it, and, like, if you're the kind of person like me who occasionally still digs out Final Fantasies 4, 5, and 6, even 1, 2, and 3 to some degree, and you still enjoy playing those games, I can guarantee you World of Final Fantasy is a game that you're going to enjoy from a gameplay perspective for sure. The storyline is a little bit Kingdom Hearts, but with Final Fantasy crossovers instead of Disney
Final
crossovers.
Final Fantasy is light crystals?
Basically, yeah. But I'm still finding it really compelling and really fun, and I'm really loving all of the storyline plot points where, like, I had to go to Cornelia from Final Fantasy 1 and meet the Warrior of Light and talk to the princess and save them from goblins. It was just, like, a really cute homage to Final Fantasy
1. I've seen a lot of screenshots, and that the writing is just clever and funny.
Oh, yeah, the localization is brilliant. I'm really enamored. I think it's a really fun experience. I'm really enjoying it. What about you, Slaggy? What have you been playing?
Honestly, this past week, I've been fighting off an illness, so I really didn't get a whole lot of gaming time in. I've tried to do a little bit of the... I'm trying to think since the last time we recorded. I've tried to do a little bit of the Halloween stuff for WoW. Oh, I don't remember if I mentioned that I started working on leveling my priest slowly but surely, so she's kind of making her way up. But yeah, this past week in particular, I've been fighting off a cold, so hopefully... My voice hasn't been too rough tonight.
You've been fine. You did cough a couple of times. I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you. So,
social links?
Social links. Over on the Twitter, we have tweet from Your Enzyme saying, "Oh, come on, LOL. Anyone with trepidation with new Nintendo hardware is just a Nintendo hater." And you had clarified on Twitter and in this episode, Your Enzyme following up, "I knew that. Just like to give a little grief when I can. Smiley face. I appreciate the grief. I wish I had the ability to use mass transit. I'm stuck driving everywhere, so the Switch's portability is moot." So I could definitely understand that perspective.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't have a commute, and I mean, I drive to work, but I don't have a, like, long commute, so for me, commuting isn't really a thing.
But you do spend a considerable amount of time away from your consoles.
Yeah, and I mean, even if it's just, like, I don't want to have to sit upright to be playing a console right now. I want to just lay in bed and play my game. I think that the portability will have some definite benefits, and, like, especially bringing over and having a full console experience over here at the SS Game Buoy when I come to record.
Indeed. That'll probably make it easier for us to talk about games on launch weekends and stuff, so that'll be cool.
Yeah, and that does it, but we love your feedback. We like your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews. Same with Google Play and Stitcher Radio. If there's anywhere else you feel that we should be, please drop us a note. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
Yeah, we effing love Twitter.
And you can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org!
And our home base is GameBuoy.org, where you can find all 124 of these puppers.
GameBuoy.org.
Captain Spike, where should we listen to other podcasts? By we, meaning the audience.
I would recommend people check out the Voice of Geeks Network. You can find them over at VogNetwork.com.
Maybe you're listening to us there right now.
Indeed, maybe. You can hear such shows as Girls Gone WoW, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, and Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. You can listen to myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers meta series, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based out of Japan. That's Ranger Pridecast, and obviously we approach everything from a positive and kinda gay perspective. Last but not least, over on VOG, you can check out the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. I'd be remiss to also not mention the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the the tin. Sorry, I stumbled over my words there for a minute. You should check Nintendo Love Fest out for sure. They are super great guys. And you should also check out their sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. Last but definitely not least, we have Reading is Fundamental. This is Slagkick's show about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race. We are, I think, tomorrow scheduled to record our last episode of the current season. It has been a hoot, and I cannot wait for the next season. Slaggy, take us to a game bar.
Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, which is what we like to call our LGBT-friendly podcasts, including Video Game Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, La Palanca Podcast, Podcast por y para Gay Gamers, Latino Americanos en Español, and Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about them. I would be remiss not to mention our allies of the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk. And I believe that Brondorf over there just revived Enos Lives. Enos Lives for a new episode about a week or so ago.
Yeah, I think the new run of that is on their fourth or fifth episode now.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't notice that they'd started back up with that. If you'd like to hear more of us, you can go over to Anime Buoy, which is your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. We're kind of shifting more into a monthly show with that because, as you might know, we've also launched recently the Same Type Attack Bonus podcast, or Stabcast for short, over at Stabcast.org.
Stabcast.org.
Which is your twice monthly look into the deeper worlds of Pokemon. You can bet that we're definitely excited about Sun and Moon. We have some really exciting shows planned in the pipeline, so please look forward to it. And our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They unfortunately shut their doors quite a while back, but will forever be pouring out at 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain in remembrance.
Awesome. All right. Well, all that having been said, it has been a real pleasure to talk to all of y'all this lovely Sunday afternoon that feels like an evening because of daylight savings time. Hopefully you've had as much fun listening as we've had talking. We will be back at you in the next week or two, but until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy.
Wee-oo.
Are hot. Speak in your mic for me.
Microphone.